Good evening, Tribe World. I'm your host, George, and I've got a Christmas treat for you this evening. Certainly, I'm joined by none other than legend and creator of the Tribe, Raymond Thompson. How are you this evening, Ray?
I'm very well, thanks, George. You're in the UK, I'm here in New Zealand, so it's my morning and it's your night, and so it's like I live in the future here. And hello to everybody, all the listeners in Tribe World. So thank you for inviting me to be part of this podcast, George, and I look forward to talking all matters tribal. And how's the weather in the UK right now? You're getting all ready for Christmas. It's pretty cold out there, is it?
Yeah, it's very cold. A lot of rain, as always, is this time of year. I imagine the climate sort of in New Zealand is probably a lot more pleasant.
That's right. We're in the equivalent of, it's the summer down here, spring summer. So it's, we're dreaming of a white Christmas with our sunglasses on and barbecues and on the beach. So it's a special time of the year.
Perfect. Thank you very much for your time. So what we're going to get into tonight, in essence, is we've got quite a few questions from the Tribe World community. A couple of questions I've always wanted to know, so I appreciate you sort of doing this for us. What we're going to go for, a couple of real big questions, so I'll start sort of at the beginning, really. Just kind of ask you, really, where was your original sort of idea for the Tribe, and how did you sort of develop that? Where did you get that inspiration from, please?
That's an interesting one, really, that without kind of trying to age myself, I grew up at a very special time in the 60s, and I'm an old ex-hippie, I guess. But at that time, I was a young man, and this was in the flower power days with a cultural explosion around the world where, young people were marching in protest against the Vietnam War and all kinds of things. John Lennon was singing about Give Peace a Chance. And I think probably that the idea, the notion, being a young person coming of age in the 60s, a very exciting time, kind of rebelling against the status quo, about authorities, about the previous generations, feeling that perhaps they were screwed up or that young people could build a better world. The idea started to gestate in many ways. And to cut a long story short, it took a long time for it to come together because I was actually in the music industry and as a composer, musician, but my dream was to be a writer. And it was very difficult without any track record, as a newcomer, as somebody who hadn't so-called made it, or I just didn't know how to put anything together. Throughout my ensuing career, I'd always toyed with the idea, I had different versions, different incarnations of the story about really basically young people without adults per se, to really rebuild society in their own image, whatever that image might be. Over the ensuing years, I became, thankfully, a bit had some reasonable success in broadcasting, and particularly at the BBC. But again, when I would pitch the idea, people didn't really warm to it. So it wasn't until much, much later when I had founded my own production company, and that's the Cloud Nine Screen Entertainment Group, which brought me to New Zealand. And we did a lot of shows, a lot of series. And it became, everybody couldn't see it. By everybody, I mean the conventional broadcasters or distributors, and I took a big gamble, really, a big decision. I mean, normally, George, and your listeners might be interested, it was normal. They'll hear that pilots are made of different shows. What normally happens is that you'll go and produce a pilot, and if that's successful, that's one episode, a pilot, then it will go to series. Somebody might commission 10 episodes or 13 or 26. But I, either very stupidly or very optimistically, went to make 52 episodes, which was crazy and unheard of, really. And so really the only way that I could do it in the way that I had dreamt of doing it, wanted to do it, was passionate about doing it, was actually with the help of Channel 5 in the UK, and the very nice man who was the head of children's programming, who had agreed to at least acquire the series. He was very supportive and gave me the editorial control, creative control, which isn't like a megalomaniac ego type thing. It's just incredibly important that I was able to go and really, recruit a team. And I worked with Harry Duff, and Harry and I, incidentally, we worked together many, many years ago at the BBC. And Harry is a terrific writer, a wonderful human being, very passionate man, a great creative integrity. And we assembled, or I assembled then, a production team down here, and we had some fabulous people and a great team of writers. So it's been a long process. I mean, my goodness, I came of age at kind of 16, 17, 18. And it probably took, probably another 20 years for me to finally be able to go and give this a shot. And thankfully, I mean, Cloud Nine to some people is a big, big company, and in many ways we are, it's all relative. But in other ways, we're not a big Hollywood studio. It's an independent company. We kind of had a certain budget that we had to work to, and we went and made the series, and thankfully it kind of emotionally connected with its intended demographic, the viewers, people like yourself and other fans, and spoke to them in a very profound way, really, and in a very special way, which is great. And so that, in very broad terms, George, is how it all came together.
Thank you for that very detailed response. I really appreciate the length of detail you went into. I'm now going to go with kind of the second question I have. Would you consider a modern remake of The Tribe, considering the advances in cinematography since the show was made, and as well as the cultural shift towards darker, grittier themes now seen on TV? Do you feel that could suit sort of better if the show was to kind of come out again today?
Yeah. It's interesting, really, because we get a lot of questions from a lot of fans on our official social media sites about sequels or reboots or movie versions. And as a lot of the fans will know, that at the end of season 5, and if I may, George, I'd just like to, and it's good these podcasts to have an opportunity to go into a bit more detail, and I don't want to to bore you with kind of too much minutiae, but it's wrongly reported that I stopped The Tribe because the characters were getting older. And the context of that, that's a bit out of context. Television is an interesting medium, and schedulers like to schedule. They tend to brand something. It's either children's programming or young adults or drama or whatever, sci-fi or whatever. And The Tribe was an unusual one, really, because I never perceived it as solely being children's programming. And we were proven to be correct, because the people that watched The Tribe were all ages, probably ex-hippies like myself, who would look back, and warm to the themes. It would be, it's about human interaction, human interplay. And that's the best drama. I often used to call it Mad Max meets Neighbours, or Home and Away meets The Terminator, or Beverly Hills 90210, whatever the equivalent human drama series are, against a dystopian backdrop. But I'd always thought of The Tribe as not necessarily post-apocalyptic in a very negative way, but I always wanted it to be a blue sky dystopia, positive and with hope, you know? And so we could get into dark themes, as we did with many of the tribes, Zeus and the Zutis, but the mole rats represented hope and positivity for all within the tribe. There was dissension and disagreements. So, but coming back to your original question, George, what had happened was that when the characters started to age and the actors became older, a lot of the broadcasters would say, well, there's no children. This isn't children's programming. So that's the context when I, in consultation with Channel 5, because would it move out of Channel 5's children programming and go into adults? You see, it became a bit of a hybrid. And when you think that we did, whatever it is, almost 300 episodes, I mean, you know, normally that's like 30 seasons if you're doing 10 episodes a year. And creatively, you know, it's exhausting. It took, you know, 5, 6, 7 years solidly, you know, to put these together. It's a lot of work, a lot of time. And I wanted to rest it with the intention of doing a sequel or coming at it a different way to relaunch it so that it could go into the mainstream rather than just children's programming. And I'm a big fan of Star Trek, you know, and I loved what they did with that franchise where they had movie versions and different sequels. And so I then went to Hollywood to develop a motion picture. And that's a long, complicated story that I can go into later if you like.
Whatever works best for you, really. I'm happy to sort of, if you want to continue, whatever you're happiest with, really.
I mean, Hollywood is an interesting place. It's governed by Wall Street, and I understand that. And you get, it's a mix between creative people and business people. It's a business.
A question that many have asked for many years, of obviously there was the talk of a deal with I might be wrong with the title, Epic Productions or something like that. Maybe I've got the wrong production company behind it, but please go into the details of it.
We did a deal with Legendary, a very big studio in Hollywood, very good people in that, and basically what happens is that you then enter into development. And sorry, I don't know if you can hear a dog in the background. I'm on my vineyard, so I'll just get the dog to stop barking. I've got two beautiful Boradors. They're absolutely lovely, and they're and in fact, Bob. It's interesting. I'm going off topic here, but Bob, the dog, after the tribe retired to the vineyard, so he then became what he does for a living, a dog. You know, and he's an actor. And became a dog, and so he spent his last years on the vineyard, and I swore, because Bob became my best friend, and when he passed away, it hurt so much. I thought I'd never get another dog, until I went to with my young son, and to a dog pound, an animal RSPCA, and saw these two beautiful puppies, and ended up going out for a loaf of bread, and came back with two puppies, and one of them is barking away for attention. So I don't know if you can still hear him. Probably not, but I can. And it's making it difficult to concentrate. So I'm getting one of the team to go and take him for a walk.
I'm going to kind of go into a few more questions. You spoke about a sort of a demographic of a younger target audience. That brings me nicely into some questions I've got about The New Tomorrow. It's a lot of questions that have probably plagued a lot of people for a lot of years. So I'm going to go into them, just go into as much detail as little as you want. One of the main ones was, obviously, Skye speaks a lot about the Mole, the character Skye, and the original Mallrats. What was the sort of original connection going to be between Skye and the Mole as such? Could you tell me?
So The New Tomorrow, at some point I was keen to do either a prequel or a sequel in creative terms. And The New Tomorrow in development, Cloud Nine, we developed The New Tomorrow and then approached a broadcaster in Australia. And again, it segues into the point that you then have to start molding creatively storylines to fit what a broadcaster might want or what different regulations are in place. And in Australia, they had different rules and regulations for children's programming that prevented us from doing the story that I had wanted to do. And so what happened was, and again, I'm very proud of The New Tomorrow and the cast and the crew, and think it's they did a great job. But it wasn't the series that I had envisaged to do, for all that I'm very pleased with it and very proud of it. So Skye was a holdover And at some point, you know, I will kind of reveal details on that, you know, because it would give a lot of spoilers. But, you know, the Privileged Tribe and the Discards and Sky and Flame, it all, in the series The New Tomorrow, it became a bit of a different a self-contained storyline in its own right with the different tribes, which was to satisfy what the broadcaster and the regulatory bodies wanted. And we did that, and people, a lot of fans loved it, and it got new fans. But it wasn't really a sequel, a true sequel to The Tribe, because it was targeting a much younger demographic, a much younger, literally it was a children's show. And that, in so doing, prevented us from exploring some of the themes and storylines that we wanted. So it just became trapped in remnants, threads of the development. You know, so Sky and, you know, references to Zoot and the ancestor and all this kind of thing. You know, it was a standalone series with some tenuous links to The Tribe, you know, but not what I would perceive to be the sequel that I had wanted to carry out, if I may. And George, if I could just come back to the movie version, just to explain what happened there, that we had a very, and I'm prohibited by, because we have to sign non-disclosure confidentiality agreements, but there was a major A-list director who loved The Tribe, who was a very nice man, and your listeners will have seen many of his movies. He was a tremendous guy who really believed in The Tribe. You know, the business is such, some of the governing people that fund movies don't feel comfortable, you know, to invest the vast sums. I mean, some of the budgets, like, they're like $80-100 million. And then Cloud9 lost editorial control. And, you know, we would have people suggesting storylines that I didn't feel comfortable with, and actors and cast that also, but I didn't have the say in it. So I had no option but to continue on until the rights reverted. And that's why, you know, if The Tribe movie could have been made, I would have much preferred it to not compromise the integrity of the series. I would have wanted to do it with the same cast, but Hollywood is such where you have to have, you know, it's a director's medium now, movies, not, I mean, directors have the power, and the financial people want to have marquee famous names in the role, and they seem a bit uncomfortable if they, I mean, I'm very proud of our Tribe cast. They're terrific, talented people, and nice people as well. I just didn't hire them for their talent, but for their personalities. They're good human beings. And so that's the movie version. It didn't happen. It might happen if I can. I'll never stop trying. It's just to find the right set of circumstances. And the same applies, George, for the sequel. If I could bring the sequel together in the way I would love to do it. So it's not that I'm against doing it. I know the Tribe cast, the Tribe crew would love to do it as well. So it's something that, unfortunately, it's just the state of the industry, and the industry is evolving. It's changing with streaming, with multi-platform devices. It's a bit of a different industry. So to come back to your original question, yes, we would love to do it. We'd love to have the freedom creatively to do it the way we want to do it. But I've resolved that I don't want to do it in the wrong way, that I think would betray the loyalty and the integrity of the series from the fans' point of view. I mean, I couldn't imagine the fans seeing different actors in there playing Bray or Ebony or Amber. You know, and so I prefer not to do it. And because I'm not the type of individual, George, that's motivated in matters fiscal. Money is very important, obviously, to people, but the money doesn't bring happiness. The lack of money brings unhappiness. But I'm more interested in people and ideas and dreams. And as long as I've got enough to see me through, I could have sold the rights for a lot of money, but I don't want to do that. I don't need to do it. It's not what motivates me. It's not a priority. It's more of, I'm a creative being, and I like to do what's creatively important. The New Tomorrow, as I say, that's coming back to that. It stands alone. I'm proud of it. I think the cast were great, the crew. It touched a lot of younger people and more people, and actually some young children that never saw the tribe, loved the New Tomorrow, and that's great.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. I'm going to go into, I had two last kind of questions about the New Tomorrow, just while we're kind of on the subject of sequels and New Tomorrow. So I'm just going to go into them. So obviously, Sheens were quite prominent sort of in the New Tomorrow. Clearly, the first draft scripts of season 6 that are on the DVD for series 5, they're mentioned as well. What was the sort of purpose of the machines, and kind of where was that kind of going to lead eventually?
That's, a very good question. And if I could explain, the development process is such that we have different versions of different scripts according to different criteria. So those scripts that we had, the season 6, I think, that was released in the DVD, that formed part of one possible way that we would take this. And it was a works in progress, not definitive. And some of the machines might come out in subsequent novels way down the line without giving any spoilers. So we took extracts of that to use some of the machines in the New Tomorrow. But I wouldn't want any listener to think that the scripts that were released on the DVD were the definitive way. Yes. I have a screenplay that I had written myself during the Hollywood time, which in fact I might publicize. I'll have a chat with our publishers, because I think it would be helpful for the listeners, if they're tribe aficionados and tribe fans, if they couldn't see the movie that I had dreamt of and wanted to do, at least they could read the screenplay. And that screenplay is totally different to those scripts of the potential season 6. So the machines certainly formed part of it. I probably can't get into it, George, without giving spoilers. So at some point we can maybe chat in podcasts in the future. So the machines were a holdover of some ideas that I had that I would have done had we done the sequel with that version of the scripts that was released with the DVD.
That's brilliant, thank you. Just the last question I kind of had on the New Tomorrow was, I don't know whether you can answer this, but I'll ask. So was the New Tomorrow ultimately set in the past or the future? Because obviously, what was the time difference if that was the case?
And this is where the horse becomes a camel, and I can reveal, and it's exclusive. It was originally going to be one version. The sky would have been Ray's great-great-grandfather.
Wow. God, that's...
And Fhaegar and things like this. That's how it started, but it didn't end up that way. And it didn't end up that way because, we have to take what's called notes, or that broadcasters would want to change something. And that's why, in the Cloud Nine incarnation, I was able to go and do whatever I wanted to do because we owned the rights, we funded the rights. We didn't have anybody saying, you mustn't do it this way, you've got to do it that way, which is normally what happens, you see. And we don't have editorial control. And so it's a very shrewd and incisive. I'm impressed that you asked that question, actually, because there are certainly hints that were a holdover where a lot of people, and you'll notice there was markings in the caves, prophecies, which I had always envisaged that the New Tomorrow would have been this the start. So is it 1,000 years in the past? Is it 1,000 years in the future? All will be revealed eventually, George.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love, thank you for the exclusive there. That's fascinating to know that kind of one of the things of, like, when you think about things logically and look at things in detail to finally get that sort of morsel of information. Thank you for that. I've got, going to go into a bit of a sort of rumour that's going around. So we've obviously been very lucky and blessed to have 3 Tribe books that have come out since, following on from season 5. A lot of people are saying that they're just fan fictions and they're not official, and you've sort of not really endorsed sort of the storylines in them. Can you just dispel any rumours to that? Obviously, you're heavily involved in the creative in them. You can read them and you can see the storylines from them. There's a lot to take in the books. I appreciate that, but can you just go into sort of how you're involved in the sort of writing the books and stuff like that?
So first and foremost, that they're not fan fiction. And there's nothing wrong with fan fiction. I mean, there's a brotherhood and sisterhood, George, in this industry, that rather like boxers, or, you know, you can fight and at the end you hug each other because you know the pain. I mean, anybody that fills blank pages or creates something, I love, I really do. I love to see fans writing their own interpretations, and I love them for doing it. And I love anybody that has the discipline to sit down and live. You know, I've been a writer all my life, and I live with the blank page, which is to fill blank pages with words is horrendous, you know. So I don't criticize fan fiction in a pejorative way. I applaud it. I think it's terrific. I really do. And I love all the different takes. So when I say fan fiction, I mean it. That if people think it's not official, that disturbs me, because it is official. It, like it or hate it, it's the way I want the story to go. I would never authorize storylines to deviate in a way that didn't feel right in my heart and soul about reflecting the story that I wanted to do. And Harry as well, you know, Harry and I and the team, you know, we were very caring, passionate people. So after season 5, and when we were in development with the motion pictures, and sometimes the reason that there's a delay is that when we go into development, some of the studios will prohibit us from doing other things, because they then have an option and they control the rights in the development period. So we've been able to release books, but when the rights expire, we're then able to release books again. So I wanted to do a series of books as tie-ins that would do a couple of things. A, give us an opportunity to explore storylines that we probably couldn't afford to do in the season, you know, because we have limited budgets. It's not the whole 100. It's not like Game of Thrones, where we can spend millions on episodes. But the good thing in a book, that you're limited only by the imagination, you know? So the books, if we had unlimited resources, those books would probably, not exclusively, but form part of the thread on where season 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 would have gone. And so what I had hoped was that if the fans were hungry to find out what happens, where it goes, how their characters, their favorite characters evolve, this was a medium for us to do it. And AJ is the pseudonym of a very talented individual who has a tremendous love of the tribe and passion of the tribe. Some things would be proposed and I would say yes or no. Other things proposed, I think, wow, what a terrific idea. I didn't think of that, go for that, I really love it, you know. And Harry's the same, you know, it's a collaborative thing. Something that Harry would want to do, I wouldn't want to do. Some things I would want to do, Harry wouldn't want to do. But ultimately, somebody has to make a decision. I'm very pleased because thankfully, they're very successful. The fans seem to love them. And as long as they love them, we'll continue to do it, you know. But I don't want anybody to think, oh, this isn't official, because it is official. And they may not like it, but that's official. And I personally, I love the latest book. I think it's fantastic. It does represent themes that I think are, you know, really caring and beautiful and pure and building a better world. And that's what it's all about. And it reflects my dream of building a better world, of blue sky dystopia.
I read the latest one within 24 hours. I was gripped. I couldn't put the book down. And I just think it's one of those things where we kind of waited 4 years for a book. And I don't want to give spoilers, but you have to kind of, if you're a true Tribe fan, you have to buy the book to see what would happen. And I would say just sort of just go out and buy it and just follow in and just invest and just sort of, you can. It's just great that we're so lucky so many years after season 5 ended to still have content coming out. And we're getting the answers to sort of, we're getting answers that happen to the characters, which for me is crucial. I would hate the Tribe to have ended in season 5 and then never find out where they went. We had the 2 scripts and then that would be it. The fact we've had sort of 3 books, we've got your memoir book as well, which is another fascinating insight that provides, I think, some clues as well, maybe sort of into sort of certain drafts of the script and stuff as well. I think it's fascinating. What I'm going to do now, Ray, I'm going to go into some listener questions we've got that have been sent in that I think would be quite interesting. So I'll go into one here. I've got one from Jasmine in Newark in America. There's a theory about Mega and Ved, the characters Mega and Ved. Is it true that Ved would have been the bad guy in season 5 instead of Mega? Was that ever the plan?
That's, again, a wise and shrewd observation that, when we're doing 52 episodes, that what starts out as a blueprint for these storylines kind of evolves. It depends on how our budgets go or how the cast would go. And so, yes, Ved could have turned out to be a baddie, but because the character of Ved had moved on for a number of reasons, that we then adapted some of the storylines and evolved so that Mega became the so-called baddie. And then also to seed the character of Slade, you know, so it kind of, it's always organic, George, you know. So on one hand, basically to answer the question, it wasn't definitive, it wasn't kind of planned that way, but it evolved that way due to certain circumstances. And if I could just say one thing about some of the characters, when we were doing seasons, I mean, the actors, some of whom were very young, would live away. You know, we had a tribe school, they'd have house parents, they'd live away from home. And some of them also had their own schooling work. Some had to leave to the series for, like Amber, Beth sometimes would need to miss a season for her academic school work. And so we'd target the storylines accordingly. Sometimes some of the younger cast might be unhappy, or they might feel they're happy, but we employed psychologists and psychiatrists and, you know, we're the custodians of their welfare when we're in production, and they work very hard, long hours. They live away from home. We had house parents, cast houses, schools. So it was enormous pressure, let alone the storylines, that I was always concerned for young people to know that some of the storylines weren't adversely affecting the cast. So it's, you know, again, and I can understand it, there's a lot of rumor and conjecture that, all the cast, I wouldn't have cast them otherwise, they were terrific people, including Ved, wonderful young lad, a tremendous actor, very talented. But, you know, human nature and life is such that some things occur, you know, people can get romances or get ill or have schoolwork or pressure or homesickness sorry to be long-winded answering it, but it's important for the fans and the listeners to realize the various elements, that there's always more reasons why something happens that may be on the surface apparent.
Excellent. I've got another great question here. This one's been sent in from Benjamin Rayner in the United States of America. So the tribe has always had a variety of characters with different personality traits, and you shared your story about autism and the Cloud Nine Children's Foundation. Did you ever consider introducing a character with autism in the series, or was there a character that was meant to be autistic?
That's, again, a very good question. I might say that Benjamin, that's a very familiar name to me, and Benjamin, I think, was the very first person that liked the official tribe TTO Facebook page. And so hi to you, Benji, if you're listening. But basically, as a writer, what happens is that any character you write or create, and Harry's the same, you know, we all, and actors, you bring different elements. So for me, I'd always thought of Jack as being on the autistic spectrum, whether it was conscious, possibly, you know, maybe not. In Michael, who played Jack, brought a lot of very quirky eccentricities, and then we then write for his voice, and the whole thing becomes organic and grows. So the if there was anyone that would have been not necessarily autistic, but within the Asperger's syndrome, I think it would have been Jack, definitely.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. That's a very interesting that you, Jack, is it? Because Jack obviously was such an integral part. He was there for the whole duration of the show, and he offered great warmth, I felt, and I felt he battled out the tribe a lot of the time, particularly before Ram came on board. I think you didn't have that technical element, which I think Jack was a nice, worked really well with Dal, and they had that nice partnership, which was great up until season three, when unfortunately Dal was no more, sadly. I've got another question here. I've got a question here from Amanda Taylor in the United Kingdom. Did you ever imagine how much of the impact and the tribe had and still has on people's lives?
This is very like 6 degrees of separation. Now, Amanda Taylor, that's a familiar name as well. I get a lot of mail, and I always try and, I can't sadly respond to all, but I always try and make a point of responding to some. And way back when, I engaged in some correspondence with Amanda. So if you're listening, Amanda, hi to you, and I hope you're keeping well. And thank you for your question. The answer is no, I never envisaged that it would have touched. You know, I had some successes at the BBC. I did a very big series called Howard's Way that in the 80s that was very popular. It was a Sunday night drama series and ran for about 5 or 6 years and would get like 15 million people watching it. The ratings were huge, but it didn't evoke the passions that the tribe has. So I'd obviously hoped it would, believed it might touch them in a way. And thankfully it has, and it is very humbling and very profound and means a lot to have them so loyal and devoted after all these years, which is very important, George, and very special. Yeah. And we become almost, I often say, we become almost like a family, you know? And that's very important to me creatively.
It's great to hear it's important. I'm going to go into kind of something that I'm not too sure sort of a lot of people have always asked, and you can see a lot of discussion still everywhere continually. But I have to mention this, Tribe Master, that's something that what I would kind of ideally like to know, have we ever had kind of hints of who that is in the books or in the series or anything like that, and will that ever be revealed?
It will definitely be revealed eventually, and again, the Tribe Master is an interesting element that came out when we were in production, and I think some of our administrative team that in those days they'd look after Tribe World and the bulletin board, but a very big team, I think, you know, with about 10 people working full-time with the fans, the fan club, and the bulletin board as it then was, as is before social media. And we used to have a character that would give different information that then evolved into this enigmatic kind of character that I'd always envisaged was a conduit to the fans, almost as an unofficial link of what's going on. And in some ways, there's elements of different, again, without giving spoilers in the books, that there are hints of the Tribe Master in the different books. But eventually it will be revealed, yes. But I would probably spoil it if I gave too much detail now, George.
Thank you very much for that. I'm going to go into another one that kind of, or I've always kind of wanted to know. So the ending of season 5, we do see Casey and Alice and the Guardian back in the cage, and there's that tribe around them. Were they meant to be the Yoakum? Is that going to be the correct way, if they were going to be in season 6, was that who they would have been known as, I'm guessing?
While we were filming season 5, we were planning season 6, and that we were seeding different elements in season 5 without knowing what cast would be available. Some may not be available. And I, at that point, when we finished filming season 5, I actually didn't know that was the end of the season. I thought we would do season 6, you see.
Yeah, of course.
But then when it all came to pass that it was too difficult to bring together, and I, after 6 or 7 years, and that's the thing, George, that I often joke, and it's not really a joke. If you think about it, I mean, you know, 300 episodes are almost like 100 movies or something in screen time. Yeah. It's a lot of work. It's very prolific, unprecedented, really, that you will very rarely see one season with, you know, 50 episodes anymore. It's usually 10 or 13. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course.
So we were exhausted, and so at that point, it wasn't a lot of fans, which I understand, and rightly, they get frustrated saying, oh, you know, that's not a good ending. And so it was never our intention to say, look, that's stamped the end, because, and indeed, we're still going, even if it's in the format of books. So yeah. And the next book shows what happened after they left the city. Then, so each book is like a different season. And this latest one is like a season 8. And if there's a new one, that would be like a season 9. So we can, and if we are lucky and able to do a reboot or a sequel, then we will do that. And if there's ever a movie version, I can't say there will be, I can't say there won't be. All I can say is I'll keep trying to do it for as long as I can. And hopefully I can, I want to do it. Yeah, so the saga will continue.
Thank you for that. Just going to go to sort of another question I've got here. Was there any plans forever for a Tribe computer game? I wondered if that was something that was ever explored.
Yeah, very much so. We were approached by a couple of companies, you know, because the format lends itself very well to a computer game, you know, and we were looking at developing that. But, I mean, in the end, you know, even there were so many elements that I wanted to do, George, and music and movies and sequels. And you know, through some personal circumstances, when, you know, my father became ill and sadly passed away, I needed to take a bit of a sabbatical. And so we didn't bother pursuing it. But, you know, who knows, at some point, you know, we might develop one. And you know, there's lots of opportunities. And the key to this, and that's what I'm always saying, is that, you know, the Tribe fandom is very, very important, because without the Tribe fandom, there is no chance to do anything. You know, so if they love what we do, if they support what we do, then that motivates us to continue. It's not like an ego thing. It motivates us to continue doing it. And we will continue. And then for people that we can say, look how well this book has been received. And George, it's amazing that, you know, that the Tribe is being introduced to people that never even saw the series when it was first broadcast, like in Serbia, and some of the Baltic states are watching it for the first time now. And on YouTube, you know, we've put a lot of the episodes up, and some fans that never saw the series when it was broadcast are starting to watch it. Young people, even some of the fans, are watching it with their children. And a lot of fans who are reading the books, who are loving the books, thinking, wow, what is this? And then they're writing to us to say, is there a series, is there DVDs? You know, that they love the books and want to find out the source material. So I think that's beautiful. I think that's positive.
Brilliant. I'm going to go to a listener question now. This one's from Jill in the Netherlands. So she always wondered why Jay was kept wearing his Techno Grit outfit when the Technos were defeated. And so why did Jay keep wearing it? And what did you think his outfit would have looked like if he changed it?
I think that's a lovely question. That's a brilliant question. And Jill and I share the same thing. I wondered the same thing, I have to be honest. But again, just the logistics on different series, again, in the production terms, we would shoot The Tribe what's called multi-episodically. And so that means that, you know, when you film something, you don't film something a beginning, middle, and an end. In story terms, you might film the first scene, might be the end scene, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if we're doing a six-month shoot, so for continuity, it's sometimes easier to keep the costumes the same, so to speak. And that's really it for them. It's really a logistical, practical, but again, a humorous. I mean, I laugh when I smile to myself because the question is very valid. When we're shooting multi-episodically, we might shoot episode 1 and 5 in the same block, you know?
Yeah.
So it's all multi-episodic, you know, you'd shoot all the male scenes at the same time, and then you'd go on location and shoot. It's very complex logistically, and there's a lot of people like continuity and wardrobe and all kinds of things, you know, that are very hard to administer. But that's primarily the reason we kept it.
Thank you very much. I'm going to kind of go into sort of a small, I'm an attention to detail type person. So this, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Pride have like a name change in season 3? It was originally going to be called Panther. Am I wrong or have I got that right?
Names are very important. That I loved the name of Pride. You know, I loved the elemental, I loved the eco tribe. I liked that gentle living at one with nature and the beauties of the natural world.
I remember going back to kind of Tribe Master. I know Tribe Master used to do regular updates of sort of stuff that was going to happen. I remember seeing a report like a while ago, and it said that Amber, which was Eagle at the time, Eagle basically has been dealing with sort of Panther regularly. Panther's the leader of the sort of tribe. And then obviously when Panther didn't come into season 3, I knew it was just Pride. I figured maybe it would make sense for the name change to happen because Pride, I think, is a far better fit for the character, the mannerisms of the character. I think it's got a nice fit and it really reflects.
What would often happen, George, is that a lot of the team would, you know, we would do a synopsis or what's called a treatment, you know. In other words, the treatment is like a roadmap, a very rough idea of new characters, and we give notional holding names, you know. So it may have been that if somebody said, what's this character going to be called, I might not know, or I might speak with Harry and we might put a pin on it, or, you know, we would have a lot of writers' conferences, and so sometimes I'd just say, oh, maybe call it Panther for now, but until we officially name. And that's the thing, George, that it's always organic. It's a wonderful process and a collaborative one. You know, as I say, the writers, Harry, they did a terrific job, and I'm very proud of that team. And they did amazing. I mean, again, to deliver 52 scripts each season is a big ask for any writing team, and they did it very well, you know.
I think definitely when you look back at sort of The Tribe, like the first 5 series, and particularly sort of the way the series ended, there was always the cliffhanger to make you want to see more, whether it be the Technos arriving, whether it be the Chosen sort of taking over the beach and all that. Like, I just think it was amazing, and it's imperative, really. It's amazing that how the books kind of follow the sort of the cliffhanger that you have to read the next one, you have to find out what's going to happen. I think it's great. Although we've seen so many episodes of these characters, we still want to know what's going to happen to them. We're still emotionally invested even years after, which is just shows how much of a merit it is towards the integrity of the tribe, even today in 2019.
Well, that's lovely of you to say that, George, and that means a lot. And thankfully, you know, the majority of the fan base agree with you, and that's important, and that's good, because that's what we do. You know, we care. It's not making widgets. It's not nuts and bolts. It's not a process. The creative thing is a passion. It's something we care about, I care about, and we all care about. We want to do more tribal things. And that's the key, is that as long as the fans react positively, we'll continue doing it. If they react negatively and don't want any more, then there's no reason to do it. You know, It's.
I'm sure we all want more, definitely. So sort of going on to the next subject. So obviously I've read your books, and I read Keeping the Dream Alive, which I found just fascinating, just looking at the whole creative and that type of thing and some of the stuff that's said. So sort of in that book, there's mentioned of sort of towards the end of season three, where you generally are thinking of bringing the adults back. What sort of, how do you think that would have kind of played out if you did actually have the adults ultimately being in charge of the technos?
I think it would have killed the whole premise stone dead, you know. And yeah. Again, it's the type of thing, George, that, you know, you lay in bed at night as a writer, anybody creating, you know, at 3 o'clock you leap up and you think, wow, that could be amazing, you know. Then 2 weeks later you think, nah, you know, that wouldn't be good, you know. And so what I had resolved, I thought it would be much better to monitor the storylines and see our young characters age, you know, and they become. So in that respect, I mean, it's never too late to do a sequel because 10 years later, 20 years later, you know, I'd love creatively, I'd love to write today. And I'm sure Harry would and AJ would. And if I said, look, let's put our heart on the pages and write. You mentioned a 50-year-old Bray or a 60-year-old Amber and her children, her grandchildren. I mean, that's what I love. You know, it's the themes, it's technology, it's the environment, it's social justice, self-reliant, all of that. So yeah, I mean, to answer your question, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but then I thought, no, that wouldn't work, you know, and... So at the end of season five, it could have been that there was some adults, you know, but I think, again, without giving spoilers, that the adults are best explored, as has been done in the novels, and if people have read the novels, they'll know what I'm referring to, and that to me is much more intriguing and truthful for the pre-virus. If it is a virus, as I say, so we keep all, you know, I've got in my mind exactly what happened, but, you know, we if we reveal that in one episode, there's no reason to keep doing anything.
I think sort of the thing about what I think is ultimately, you're saying that if the adults were revealed in season four, I just think, how do you kind of go back from that? It would have been a shock value, 100%. I remember when I saw the plane in season three, and I nearly fell out of my chair. I was just like, oh my God, there's a plane. What's this going to mean? This is just crazy. And then you're looking at, there was an adult revealed at sort of in season four that Ram was ultimately reporting to. I think it's, how do you go back? And then you have got the question of how the adult survived the virus. And it's short term. If the show's coming to an end, I kind of get that an adult being revealed. But then it's just, why haven't they made themselves known until so late on, really? But as I said, we can kind of move forward with that question. So I've got another one here as well. Do you relate to any of the characters in the show? And that's also, and that's again from Amanda Taylor.
That's a good question. I think all of them. The different characters, they become real people, you know, but to me, they're not just friends. They become like children. They're real people. And so I relate to them all, male and female, good, bad, the Guardian, Zoot. They're all real people and form part of who we are, who I am, who Harry is, who AJ is. You know, you have to really find their true voice and the actors themselves. You know, they bring their own dimension and special. They bring them to life and portray them. And so, yeah, I do respond to them very much. Tyson, you know, Bray, Zoot, everybody, you know, they're not like, and that's the same in anything I've ever written or created or been involved with, whatever show they're, and it has to be that, it's just part of the process.
Brilliant. I've got another question in here. This one's from Dan Mellon Man in the United Kingdom. My question, do you think the show would be more, less, or equally successful if created in today's market with on-demand streaming and the decline of traditional TV channel viewing? The lack of serial drama in children's television shows is very noticeable at the moment in the United Kingdom, and I feel that The Tribe, it was one of a kind on that front.
Dan, thank you for that question. That's a good question. And when we did The Tribe, we did it at a time in the evolution of broadcasting where there were like Channel 5 in the UK, Kinderkanal in Germany, Wham in America, like really channels that were committed to so-called children's drama, for all that I didn't see it necessarily as a children's series. Broadcasters have to know, is this children's, as I said at the beginning, you know, where does it fit? Yeah, these days, I mean, you know, streaming, I think we hopefully would have found an audience in much the same way, but it does sadden me because, you know, there's nothing, again, I applaud my fellow professionals doing reality TV, and there's a good market for reality TV. It's a good format, it works, but there's very little human drama, and it's so limited when each season, as I say, is 10 episodes, and when you get trapped to do pilots, and sometimes if a season, like when I did Atlantis High, it was so out there and so crazy and so different that, you know, it's probably the type of series I couldn't have ever done without having the facility to just go and do what I wanted to do, you know, not in an ego way or a megalomaniac way, but, you know, I can't see anybody would have, given the go-ahead to do the storylines that I'd wanted to do. And so, I think with so many outlets, it's fragmented now. There's so many digital platforms, and that's a good thing for the industry. And I hope that children, young people, still have a market, and that broadcasters support that, because it's very vital. I think it's very important, and it isn't down to budgets really. And you know, you can throw $100 million to something, but you know, it's not gadgets and gimmicks. It's always down to a sincerity to character, plot, hope, positive. I love post-apocalyptic stuff. I personally love Terminator and sci-fi and Star Trek. I'm really into all that, but I like positive programming. I like hope, you know, and I wish there was more blue sky dystopia. But we'll continue to do that in the novels and other formats. And that's why I think JJ's done an amazing job. Some people will read the latest book and have never heard of the tribe, you know, never seen the tribe, probably haven't even read the previous two books. It's a very, very hard write, because you have to appeal to the aficionados of the tribe, but also new people. And that's what a lot of people don't take into account when they're reading something that, you know, and it's a very skillful structure and not easy to do, you know, and so I applaud AJ's work on it. And I think it's been done in a very terrific way, where it introduces the tribe to a new audience, but also continuing on the story of the existing one, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I really think AJ's done like a really good job, particularly of getting us invested in brand new characters that we've never heard of. I think the fact that you build up a sort of a rapport with certain new characters, you really want to see what happens to them, really. And I think the books, all three of them, give that great sort of follow-on to know sort of you are finding out information that we never would have known was excellent. Would you sort of have an interest kind of maybe coming on and doing another podcast where we can kind of go over the new book, maybe January?
I'd be delighted to do that, and I think it's a new format. And again, in my day, podcasts used to be radio. You know, no, I'd love to do that, George, and I thank you for your interest and for inviting me to do this. And thank also to the listeners for taking the time to listen to this. And I know that the TTO team had mentioned that this podcast would happen. And some of the listeners were invited to give some questions, and the TTO team were kind of overwhelmed by them and chose just a few. But we could look at more in depth at, you know, maybe season 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Once people have read the books, we can then, without the endangerment of spoilers, we can then look at some of the books and the storylines and who, why, what, where, and how. And I think that's important. And I might even do a version two of Keeping the Dream Alive to for any of the aficionados, people like yourself, to wonder what has happened since that book had ended. What have I been doing and what's been happening? So that's the key. Is, I mean, we are really grateful, and I'm always, I know I always say it, it means a lot to me to have the loyalty and support of the fandom. Without that, we don't have a tribe. Without that, there wouldn't have been, you know, almost 300 episodes or no books. But with that, we can continue going, hopefully one day to get a movie away. But if not, maybe a sequel if it's done in the right way. But definitely, it's in our gift. You know, the publishers are very supportive. AJ is very happy to continue on with more books as long as the fans enjoy them. And if they don't, we won't do it. But if they do, then great. We'll continue going. It just it helps us bring more material as long as the fan base is there.
Thank you. I really want to thank you for coming on the podcast and just sharing some stuff we never would have found out. Really, thank you for providing the update. It's been a really fascinating listen. I hope for the listeners, thank you for your questions you've sent in. And yeah, as I said, hopefully sort of we'll be able to do this again in the future.
I look forward to that, George. And thank you for you, as I said, for hosting it and inviting me on. And I'd like to take this opportunity at this time of the year, whether people celebrate Christmas or not, to wish every listener all my much love to you all, and happy Christmas to those who celebrate it. Merry Christmas to those that don't. Happy holidays, and you travel safe. Have a great Christmas and stay tribal, and as we always say, keep the dream alive. Whatever your dream is, never give up. Keep going as I'm keeping going, to keep the dream alive, to bring more tribal things to you all. And thank you for being there for us. It means a lot to us. All the very best to you all.
Thank you very much for your time, and Merry Christmas to everyone, and have a good evening. Thank you very much.
Thanks, George.